I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep At.
Even Frencher than before. Is anybody else worried that Cardi B has a herniated disc? I cannot stop thinking about her in that dress at the Met Gala.
It wasn't as big as Jordan Dunn's, 30 pounds that she was wearing?
Oh, God.
We're going to get into the Met Gala, but my official opinion is there are too many people allowed to go to the Met Gala. Because I don't remember. I'm going through the slideshow now. The Vogue one has 198 pictures. Too many. They need to call that guest list.
I mean, literally, that YouTube makeup person was allowed to be there. It was like, is
I don't even know who that is.
Can you buy tickets online?
It feels well. I heard the part
StubHub. Yeah, right.
The tea with some of it though is that there are people that get to go to the dinner, and then people that just get to go to the cocktail party.
Mm.
So not everyone that shows up is really like inside at the gala. They basically just get to like do the carpet and get some champagne, and then Anna's like, "You gotta go.
See you on the street." Yes. Yeah.
Frankly, I would do that.
No, I mean that's like I think most of them are doing that.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. You know what I mean? Like, not that many people. They can't make that many, like, poorly cooked filet mignon.
I'm going to say, what is going on inside the Met Gala? It's not like there's a conference or something. Lewis, like, I've got to get the information.
Lewis, don't you remember there was the banquet where 8 women stole jewelry?
Oh, that's
what's
right.
going
yes,
on inside
I love
it.
That Daphne documentary.
Kluger's necklace is vanishing.
You know, my hot take about that movie is that Helena Bonham Carter is the best part of it. I feel like nobody says that anyway.
Is she?
Yeah.
I think it's Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway
okay.
was very good.
Here's the thing. She is the best part, but I need the take to be hot. So the second best Helena is now my favorite.
All right. Well, we will be getting into the Met Gala and all of its messiness, but also some greatness. There were some very good moments.
For sure.
We will also be talking about our favorite person, Louis C.K., as usual.
As you know, I love comedy.
She's back.
Yeah. Comedians who make me laugh.
Her comeback tour, three strokes at a time.
Jesus.
We'll be talking to Jonathan Levine, director of the new movie Long Shot, starring Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
Giving one of her meanest performances. Always go meaner, Charlize.
All right. We'll be right back. Don't forget, our live show is next week, May 14th, at the Regent Theater in Los Angeles. There's a few tickets left, so get that shit. At crooked.com/events. The Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute hosted its annual Met Gala, aka fashion's biggest night out. Do you say gala or gala?
Gala. Though I think I say gala apples. Is that fucked up? Anyway.
I mean, I like saying gala when I feel like, you know, just being a classist faggot.
Oh, sure. If this event were gayer, I'd probably say gala.
But the night kicked off with its annual blockbuster show, which, you know, has celebrity after celebrity and some people who you wonder how they got there. But the exhibition was Camp Notes on Fashion, an ode to Susan Sontag's essay, Notes on Camp, which defines camp as love of the unnatural, of artifice and exaggeration. The evening's hosts were Anna Wintour, Alessandro Michele, the creative director of Gucci, Harry Styles, Lady Gaga, and Serena Williams. First of all, I had forgotten that Harry Styles was one of the hosts of the evening because he looked awful.
I forget about him all the time. Does he make music still?
He constantly gets points for doing the bare minimum.
Is he the one that's having the baby with the other British lady?
No, that's Liam Payne.
Yes, with Cheryl Cole.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
He had a solo career, but he has a solo album, and he is, you know, looks like a tiny Nintendo Me version of Mick Jagger.
Cheryl Cole, which, if none of you knew, like, attacked a black bathroom attendant once.
What?
Yes.
I literally just pictured her getting off the next bus, and that was the trivia fact about her.
And she was fired from X Factor US because Simon Cowell was like, people can't understand you, bitch.
Not that this justifies that, but my hot take is I hate bathroom attendants. Like, not the individuals. I know they're just doing their job. But I hate walking into a bathroom and someone hands me a paper towel, and then now I feel like I have to give them $2. Or if I don't give them the money and they... Because sometimes I'll try to grab the towel before they can hand it to me, mm-hmm. and then they, like, get it in my hands too quick. And then I'm like, I don't have any money for you, so we just did this whole song and dance for no reason, and now this is uncomfortable.
It's especially uncomfortable when there's bathroom attendants at, like, the Abbey.
Right, yeah.
Places where there shouldn't be. Yeah, no, but there are often bathroom attendants in venues that are like, we're kind of shitty, so we're going to give you a bathroom attendant to trick you.
It is kind of a shocking job. Like, you could just add an attendant anywhere. Like, oh, there's an attendant next to the plant to make sure you didn't touch the plant.
And then you have to tip them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes want to tip them just because they have to sit in the bathroom.
Right. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's fair, but, you know, maybe I don't. I'm a cashless person these days.
You're like Tender Grains.
Get a square. Yeah. Get a square. What's your Venmo?
Like, low key, I would Venmo them. That's what bathroom attendants need to do.
Gaga, of course, was fantastic.
She was great.
I need her in Sweet Charity on Broadway immediately.
That's right. She also, it was four outfits in one. So it started off with one extravagant pink outfit, turned into a black outfit, turned into another pink outfit. And then I think she was just basically in her underwear.
Which was her favorite?
Yeah, I will say, because when I first saw her in the pink, I was like, okay, so she's in a really big dress.
Mm-hmm.
So I was initially not that impressed. And then I was like, it's just big. I don't know, in a bright color. But then she kept going and she did a little show.
Yeah.
Kind of took a while, but you know.
Once she got to the vaudeville show with just like laying on the steps,
yeah, writhing.
I was like, this is Gaga. Mm-hmm. That is why we love you.
Yes, because it was both rising to the occasion and insufferable. Like, that's exciting.
But it's the Gaga that I feel like we missed from the entire Oscar campaign.
Right.
Right.
She was giving you pristine, I'm serious, I'm an actor, like the opposite of camp.
Yeah, you need to be humping staircases. That's what we want.
she did it. And in a year, sans Rihanna.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like she was, which, I mean, why do they even throw that event when Rihanna's not going?
I always say the theme of the Met Gala is, this is awkward if you're not Rihanna.
Rihanna's rude tweet, by the way, just like tweeting out Anna Wintour's outfit, best dress. I'm like... Bitch, how about you show up?
Yeah.
Don't. She loves doing that.
Also,
just look at these other people dressed like this. Look at this album you won't
maybe
get.
Maybe the whole, her not showing up, maybe that was the camp.
Right.
Her at home with the makeup, recording the album, just like shady tweets. That was Rihanna's version of camp.
Her album will be called Camp.
Right.
When you theme a thing like this about camp, which I'm sure we'll get into, all I can think of were the actual campy celebrities who weren't there. Like, you're telling me Grace Jones isn't at this, wearing, you know, like a mailbox on her head or something? You know, Tilda Swinton, Bjork. I feel like this event was like, chase Bjork's swan dress and come up with something as, you know, monumentally weird and unsettling. And a couple people kind of came close. But for the most part, I feel like people just don't get what camp is, which, as Susan Sontag once said, I'm sorry to be your freshman rhetoric teacher right now. She called it failed seriousness, which, and I thought what we mostly got on the red carpet was failed frivolity. Anna Wintour wearing a couple of feathers and some baubles, that's her trying to seem extravagant and coming off as unfun
but
to
me. But
she's
not, the thing is, Anna Wintour is not the example to use because she's not, that bitch is never on theme. She's like, I'm here, this is my event. Like, I don't think you have, she'll vaguely give you a little bit, like she'll wear a cross last year or something.
Mm-hmm.
She's never going to be the person that's like really on theme. It's these, I want it from the people that aren't, like, I don't, if you're someone who's super, like, if you're Serena Williams, I don't really care if you do the theme or not. Mm-hmm. It's these sort of mid-level people where I'm like, this could really be a moment for you to, like, show up and show out. And, like, some of them did. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and Cardi's not mid-level, but she is now 4 for 2 at Met Galas.
Yeah. I mean, well, part of the issue, too, I mean, is, like, Sontag said, like, intentional camp is usually bad.
Right. And not camp.
And
yeah.
And there's the problem with a lot of this, too, is that camp, it could rarely be achieved by a bunch of rich people showing up to a party.
Yeah.
because it's usually, you know, embodied by, like, minorities and other subcultures, you know, like drag queens and, you know, like, black culture, you know, like, you know, there's more camp at a Bronner Brothers hair show than there will be at the Met Gala.
Sierra did it. Sierra gave you, like, Bronner Brothers hair.
Yes, but in a Bob Mackie dress, which is lazy.
Yeah. Like, uh-huh. I thought she looked good. I was like, she committed to that because I was like, girl, I don't even know how heavy that is. But how did no one show up with Bronner Brothers hair?
Yes, there should have been writing in the hair. I wanted an Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I did love the people who sort of went camp by reaching toward camp icons, you know, like
totally
there was,
into
there was,
that.
There was yeah. no like Bronner Brothers hair, but there was a lot of Dapper Dan, which I enjoyed. I loved Ashley Graham in her gloves and stockings, that like gold cell phone clutch. Regina Hall.
Regina Hall wasn't necessarily camp, but she yes. was a good example of, because I feel like something to also remember with events like these is like, these people are going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be a celebrity who's like, I don't, like, red carpets aren't really fun. If you've ever, like, done red carpets or worked them, it's like, everyone there is working. And if you're an actor that's like, I don't even really like this, I don't even really mm-hmm. care about fashion, but it's part of my job to get up and get dressed, I can imagine that's very irritating. And so if you're not going to do the theme, I appreciate someone like Regina Hall who just looked beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She just, like, it's like, not really the theme, but she looked amazing. And it's like, I'm happy with that. Versus you don't really have an excuse if you aren't on theme and you look bad. Because then
Olivia
I'm like,
Munn showed up in a paper bag.
I didn't even see her.
She wasn't there.
Oh.
I just want to add to that, by the way, that red carpets in general truly feel like the airport when you are there.
They're terrible.
It is people being hustled through. You're watching some people move quickly, other people stuck, reporters who can't be hurt. It's like cacophonous. So anyway, I'm borderline traumatized from my experience.
Person having these photos and that, especially the Met Gala, like, the Met Gala carpet is huge. It's not like a movie premiere where you're at least like walking down a line. It's just like all these levels. So they're taking a picture of Priyanka and Nick over here while you're over here getting a photo. And also, they didn't look good.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was bad. I wanted to say about camp icons. I was into, we were just talking about how people can use the Met Gala to propel themselves. Elle Fanning reaching for like a Sharon Tate moment. What an awesome look on her.
Yes. She looked good. Who were the good ones?
Leslie Grossman's Zsa Gabor looked great.
Yeah, Zsa Gabor. Thank yes. you, a woman who can say faggot.
Right?
Thank you.
I liked Janelle.
Yeah, Janelle's Christian Siriano became camp for me when I saw the video and realized that the eye blinked.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. Does the other like, eye blink too?
No, there's no other eye. She has a clutch.
Oh,
so she
clutch.
Had another clutch yeah, yeah. that was the other eye.
Ryan Murphy looked good as Liberace, but he looked very uncomfortable, which is like, you know, you're like a mega writer producer. Like, he's not a red carpet person.
Yeah,
he was
right.
just there having fun. Tracee Ellis Ross.
She looked
in
great.
A picture frame, like that nod to Lorraine O'Grady's Art Is moment.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that she looked beautiful.
And also, it's like, right, there's something outside of fashion occurring there, like putting the picture frame on your face. Like, I yeah. expected more things like that. Like, where are the people dressed in outfits that are Legos or something?
Yeah.
You know, we finally got to that with Katy Perry when she got inside.
Now, I loved her!
The chandelier outfit was okay. The hamburger outfit was fucking amazing.
But did we see the video of Katy Perry in her hamburger
oh God,
outfit
in the bathroom?
In the bathroom
yeah.
Her friend filming her, and then J-Lo just walks by. She's like, Hamburglar. And the person recording is like, hey, J-Lo. And J-Lo's like, hey, girl. Walks out the bathroom.
Katy Perry also, like, she kind of gives you this every year.
Yeah.
Like, right. every time she shows up to a carpet, you're like, what is this bitch wearing? And at least this time it made sense.
She does it for you 365.
Yeah. But also, I want to say, I am mad at any celebrity that came to this year's Met Gala in a look that would basically fly any other year. Because the assignment is always outrageousness. You're
right. Harry Styles with like a blouse, which was sort of like the men showing up in suits. I'm like, okay, at least do something with the suit.
Yeah.
But
Celine?
But yeah, Celine was giving you dandelion, everything. But I just really hate the men who think that a blouse or like a lip or some makeup or like even a dress is really giving you camp, or it's just like we think that it's androgynous and gender bending. I'm like, no, it's not.
It's conventional.
I love Michael Urie's the Victor Victoria moment.
Oh yeah, that was awesome. Yeah.
What men looked good? I can't even.
Ezra Miller with that, yeah, with the like Twilight Zone like mask, yeah, with them revealing the eyes. Frank Ocean looked a goddamn mess, and I know he hangs out with too many white fashion designers to be looking like that.
Can I tell you something though? What? And this is me giving him the benefit of the doubt, and also, and you're gonna be blown away, Kim Kardashian. I think what he was going for was like a security guard at the Met. Like, it seemed, mm-hmm, like he was going for, like, a character in a similar way where when Kim came out, I was like, girl, what is this? Although I think that every time I see her. But she, I think she was her Vogue cover.
Oh, she was.
So
I
it was like
her.
Those things, like the two of them to me were where they didn't necessarily like look good, mm-hmm, neither of them, but like the idea behind it, yeah, was like pretty campy.
Yeah, I mean, Joan Crawford always gets points just for being Joan Crawford. She basically came as herself from Dynasty. It wasn't an iconic Dynasty look, but yeah, like, I mean, she walks down a red carpet. I'm like, girl, you are camp.
Also, I think the point with Kim Kardashian, you're right, I think she's being her Vogue cover. And also, she was leaning into the whole obsessiveness with looking wet. So, like, there were, like, things hanging off her to look like she had just gotten out of the water.
Well, because she was wet in the,
yeah,
Vogue cover.
Yeah,
I like,
right, yeah,
that. Kylie and Kendall. Kylie with her, literally, first of all, where was little Kim? Because she is a camp black,
right,
camp icon.
Right, totally.
You instead had Kylie basically ripping off her VMA dress, but doing it poorly, looking like a Vegas showgirl.
Yeah.
The movie Showgirls is camp. Being a showgirl is not camp.
I actually,
correct,
thought that. I was like, how did no one show up as the showgirl? But also, like, the poster, like, the one leg. You, mm, know what I mean? I was like, yeah, someone should have, like, come as, like, the movie poster, yeah, with the leg and, like, wearing a box or whatever the fuck it would take to, yeah, make it look like that. Like, that would have been amazing.
That reminds me of one of my favorite RuPaul's Drag Race looks ever, which was, there was a Madonna-themed challenge a couple years ago, and, mm-hmm, Valentina's look, which was kind of what you're describing. She was dressed as the Madonna poster. You ever seen the poster of Madonna hitchhiking on the street naked? Mm-hmm. She had the bars over her breasts.
That was great.
It's like, right, inventiveness. Like, it's not literal, and you're doing something that's, like, recognizable but fucked up.
Speaking,
you know,
of RuPaul, he looked awful.
It was like it had a horse head on it.
A zebra.
Yeah.
I also just not here for, like, RuPaul's new trick. Like, RuPaul is camp, like a camp icon, and this weird shift into, I'm just wearing suits now, I don't care about drag, come and watch my talk show where I'm interviewing Tanya Harding and, you know, mm-hmm, like, talking about how much feeling you have. I'm like, I guess you want to be, like, this is you now. You know, you want to be Oprah.
You know who was also disappointing was Nicki Minaj.
Fell into the background.
Talk about another person,
girl,
who, for the majority of her career, has been nothing but camp.
Did,
like,
we,
girl,
see
you
her
couldn't
interview where,
yeah,
she was talking,
she
about,
it,
like,
yeah,
well, you know, like, this is what Prabla, air quotes, interpreted as camp. It's like, don't throw your designer under the bus.
I mean, but she all, like, all she had, like, you know, she has a storage house full of those wigs.
She was camp.
She was 100% camp.
The entire, like, first half of her career before Cardi got her shook.
She was like, she had that character. She did it over and over. Even though, like, you never thought she looked good. I was never, mm, like, I'm happy with this. But you're like, I know what she's doing. She should have just recreated, frankly, one of her iconic looks.
Well, that's how I felt about my girl Rita Ora. Who looked?
She was there?
She looked gorgeous in, like, this gold look. But Rita Ora is another person who, like, 9 times out of 10, what she normally wears is camp.
Right.
Like, she had wore a gorgeous, like, bathrobe with, like, a towel on her head look to the European Music Awards. Rewear that, girl.
Totally.
Like, don't just, like, come out here in a boring gold thing. I loved, speaking of camp icons, Gemma Chan.
I didn't see her.
She came dressed with crystal flowers on her head and a nod to Liz Taylor in Boom.
That's what, oh,
and
my God.
She tweeted it.
Guys,
which is based on the Tennessee Williams play, the,
yes,
Train Doesn't Come Here Anymore.
Guys, Boom is a movie that, first of all, it's the kind of thing you can only see in, like, a theater in Brooklyn once every 8 years. It is Richard Burton and Liz Taylor on a random mountain somewhere screaming at
and
each other.
And Noel Coward.
Yes, Noel Coward. Yes. They're one of the gayest pieces of anything we have.
Billy Porter was gay personified. And I always hate how, like, these roundups of, like, oh, look at men, you know, defying gender or whatever, like, include his ass. He was giving you Antony and Cleopatra, Act 5, Scene 2.
Right.
I mean, I feel like he got his, like, I think all of the coverage I saw was, like, Lady Gaga and Billy Porter. Like, he, I mean, the male servants carrying him had gold Tims on.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I think Celine Dion just came up earlier, but I was just thinking about how, and I'm sorry, this is now not an original thought because I saw Tom and Lorenzo, the great fashion bloggers, also bring this up. But man, we are really like running out of true camp icons.
We are.
Like Celine Dion, she kind of personifies some version of camp, which is her relationship to reality is a little bit tenuous. It's you're always a little
That's
cuckoo.
Generous.
Yes. But it's in a way better than reality.
Yeah.
There's something just so like endorphin building about how weird she is, you know, and that's like reminds me of John Waters films, etc.
I thought that Casey Musgraves had a like
I
nice
liked her.
Moment.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought that was the best one.
The Barbie
the
hand,
best?
The Barbie hand really took it there
because it was fucked up. There was something it, like she held her jaw a certain way. The way like her like hand was like curved like Barbie's hand. It's like this is gross, kind of, and like just looking at her, the glossiness. There was something there, like imitating something fake, but there was a human trying to get out of it. It was just creepy, and I thought that was campy too.
Zendaya, I never say her name correctly. Zendaya.
Her Cinderella moment.
The Cinderella
was
moment.
Gorgeous.
Did you see when she left her glass slipper?
Yes.
Running up the stairs,
yes,
like
she
really
glass
committed.
On the stair.
That's
she
fine.
Had a fairy godmother like give her that. And part of I think the story was that like the person who's been her designer and stylist has been working with her since her Disney days. So that was her sort of like. I'm an adult now. I'm growing up, leaving Disney behind.
I will say,
Natasha Lyonne looked great in her Gaultier jumpsuit, which was a nod to Klaus Nomi, which is perfect camp because he was a backup dancer for Bowie on his SNL performance.
And her purse just was a clear like bag of cigarettes. That was amazing.
But it's celebrities like that who you expect to have fun and sort of do this. I don't know. I still sort of think that like the Met Gala is fun. Camp was an interesting theme. As I said, rich white people doing camp is comical.
Yeah, camp too. It's like how the song Ironic becomes extra ironic if it's not ironic or whatever.
Did you see your favorite person, Rami?
Rami Malek is in my list of four worst dressed people of the evening. I mean, he literally just wore a suit.
I know.
And some, like, red pants. I'm tired of him.
But, you know, I would have rather he just worn a black tuxedo to make it clear that he wasn't even trying, as opposed to, like
Shawn Mendes.
But, I mean, like, whatever. From, like, straight dudes, I'm like, they don't even, like, just show up and look nice and don't even, like, every time Jay-Z show, you know what I mean? You're just like, you're not even trying, that's fine.
Michael B. Jordan just looked sexy.
But for him
Henry Golding had, like, that purple suit, but, like, he looked good.
For him to do the, like, I'm going to wear a different pant, it's like, you should have just worn a regular suit.
I expect that for, like, a Henry Golding or, like, a Michael B. Jordan, though, because they're just actors, too. Like, you were saying about Regina. But, like, Shawn Mendes is, like, one of the biggest pop stars in the world right now. So, like, you should be giving me something.
Yeah.
Also, Rami Malek, you just played Freddie Mercury.
Yes!
Like, what are you talking
about?
He just
played Freddie Mercury, and then he shows up to the Met Gala, which is camp. Look at a hot-ass mess. Also a mess. I don't know what Emma Stone was doing.
I didn't even see her. What was she wearing?
She looked like she was going to San Junipero. She had, like, this green jumpsuit and, like, tousled 80s hair to the side.
There's
and
too
I was
many
just
people.
Like...
I didn't even see her.
Emma Stone, in a way, kind of shies away from a lot of aspects of celebrity. Like, she's just not on social media in a way. Like, she's cool, but she's, I mean, I don't mean to compare everybody to this person, but like she's got that Jennifer Lawrence thing of like it is about like you know down to earth relatability ultimately, even
Whereas
though I think
I
her movies
like
are
Emma
awesome.
Stone, I'd want to hang out with actually,
I'd hang out
as
with
opposed
Jennifer
to Jennifer,
I'm not determined to hang out with people who are relatable, I want to hang out with psychopaths. So,
well, what's that? You hang out with
you
me.
Already do,
<That's right. laughs> I did it. somebody else who I just thought looked amazing, not Camp Dua Lipa, that was fun.
Oh, yeah, Dula Peep. She looked great. I don't know. Do we miss anything?
I feel like
I'm
we
sure
had,
we
I
did.
Like we had a
there are 1,000 people effort. There.
Yeah, there are too many people there.
Rihanna, come back. Yeah.
Please come back, Rihanna. Beyonce, come back. Where were you, girl? Even though she never looks good at the Met Gala.
She doesn't not look good. She just doesn't do the theme at all.
Blake Lively, I think you would have shown up for this and done some Scrooge McDuck shit.
The most boring actress in the world you thought would have turned out at camp?
No, she was literally camp in A Simple Favor. All she had to do was come in a pantsuit and swilling some aviation gin brought to you by Ryan Reynolds.
No, I find her like obsessive about like, I dress in a fucked up, you know, lady gangster way now. You know, you'd think that would fit
she
in the
theme. She just wears suits.
Wasn't her wedding on a plantation
camp? Which are
camp?
On theme, yeah.
Her plantation wedding was high camp. Yeah, I guess that's the theme. If you want to do camp, next time I come as a white woman getting married on a plantation.
Last recommendation. So Susan Sontag, who like wrote notes on camp or whatever, if you ever want a fun YouTube poll, watch her being interviewed and rejecting the premise of every question she is asked and just ruining every interviewer's life. And she used to be with Annie Leibovitz, of course,
yes,
who I'm sure is trying to sell you a masterclass on YouTube right now.
I mean, Notes on Camp is in her book, like Notes Against Interpretation, which also has an essay on Ionesco. And I feel like her essays are like reading an Ionesco play because it's always like, I shouldn't be writing about camp, but I am going to be writing about camp. This is what camp is, but also it's not what camp is. Whatever you think camp is. But whatever you think camp is, isn't what camp is. If she didn't know what the fuck it was, you know what? You want camp? Go watch Baps on Netflix.
Oh, my God.
That is the best camp movie that has ever been made.
Netflix might be generous. I might suggest Redbox first.
No, yes. they just added it. Netflix. What are you talking about?
I was kidding.
Yes. Redbox. You tap into one of those and like the CIA finds you. When we're back, we're going to talk to Jonathan Levine, director of Longshot.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Politics has always had a ubiquitous presence in our culture.
Don't speak for me. I rarely think about it.
All right. Well, from music to sports and film, I know you love thinking about sports.
Mm-hmm. Doing it right now.
And ever since Donald Trump was elected president in 2016, it's felt almost impossible to produce art without it being inherently political. Is this just like the thesis for Keep It? It's like I'm doing a teaser again. And now politics has found a new home in romantic comedies, thanks to our guest director of the new film Longshot, Jonathan Levine.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, we really did segue like seamlessly from a pre-conversation into this conversation.
We were literally just talking about this in what
I thought was a casual way, and then you said, let's start the podcast, and you literally just went right into it. It's really cool.
I had a friend once who was on Oprah, and she said you kind of couldn't tell when the show was starting or whatever. She would just keep talking you through the break, and like you would realize, oh wait, I'm on the show right now.
That's scary.
They'd save it for after the show. Yeah. Or just like her personal tapes where she rewatches her interviews. She's like, yeah, I really asked them a good question there. Anyway, your movie stars Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
Yes.
Who do you like more?
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like them both equally. And that is genuinely true. I've made three movies with Seth and I've gotten to hang out with him a lot. And I didn't think I could like anyone more than I like Seth. We have a lot in common. And then Charlize is just so dope that like it really has become a very tricky selection. Not that I have to.
I have to tell you a Seth Rogen politically themed story.
Okay.
Which is the day after the 2016 election, I went to a coffee shop and I was sitting there waiting for my friend and I had like just stopped crying and like gone out to get a cup of coffee. I'm sitting there miserable. feel like shit. And then I hear Seth Rogen's voice in the coffee shop, and it truly snapped me back to reality. Because when you're like, Seth Rogen, like, what's happening? And his voice is very distinctive. And I was like, oh, yeah. The world is ending, but I guess it's still going on.
There's something very calming about his presence.
It was actually weirdly very calming. Yeah.
And his voice, yeah.
It was very calming, and it reminded me, like, wow, this sucks, but I guess the world is still moving.
I know what coffee shop that is, but I'm not going to expose his business.
I know which one. I deliberately didn't
say it. Stalkers in these streets, but Harry Styles goes there, too.
I deliberately didn't say it for that
reason. Harry Styles goes there, too?
He loves that coffee shop.
Really?
Yeah.
I know exactly which coffee shop. Yeah. Continue this from that coffee shop. I have a story about Jon Favreau.
Oh, please.
Oh, please.
Oh, wait. This Jon Favreau.
This
yes.
Jon Favreau.
Yeah, uh-huh. The one who will never be on this podcast.
Right. He just won't
He's
do
banned.
It.
We're ideologically Why? Opposed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we met, like, you know, he was in his previous life a speechwriter.
Is that what he did?
Yep, totally. Oh. So we, I got in touch with him through a friend, and I met with him. This was like 2 years ago when we were like developing the script because mm-hmm. I thought he would have insight into speechwriting. And we met, and I was like, dude, we should, you know, totally hire you as a consultant and pay you for your time. And he was like, no, I'm good. and I was like, no, like you can. No, he's like, no, you know, I have this podcast thing. I was like, is that like, can you make money doing that? Is that like lucrative? He's like, yeah, it's starting to be. So this was like 2 years ago. So I guess he didn't need us, but he was very insightful.
As we sit in wow. the office space that there,
right,
that they've created,
which is a very nice office space, by the way.
Did you find a different speechwriter to help you? Because Seth Rogen's character in the film it ends up as Charlotte's speechwriter.
Yes. I mean, a lot of what John gave us ended up in the script. We had John Kerry's chief of staff was a consultant, so he was not so much as the speechwriting. So I think, you know, the speechwriting, we actually just brought a lot of, like, comedy writing mm-hmm. insight to it.
It sounded funny, so it couldn't have been John Kerry's speechwriter.
It was not John Kerry's speechwriter. You don't think he's funny? John Kerry's pretty funny.
The hair is funny.
I'm actually a Teresa Hines Kerry stan. I miss her terribly.
I actually was really fascinated by the idea of the speechwriting aspect of it, because I think that that's one thing that we don't really dive into when we talk about politics so much. You know, you look at like the current political climate and the people who are running, you know, like the Elizabeth Warrens, the Cory Bookers, the Pete Buttigiegs, and it's sort of like they're being modeled by what they're saying, and it's someone's writing this, and it's someone's idea of who this person should be and what we want to present to the world.
Yeah, and what we want to hear from them, yeah.
Well, it's really interesting because it's, you know, I spoke to Favreau a little bit about this concept of, like, authenticity, and these people kind of came up to him, and a lot of political candidates are like, we want to be authentic. Like, we want to feel authentic like Obama, you know, and you're already like, that's not you. So I think it's like, you know, it's important to remember that none of these people are truly authentic. I mean, I was just reading something today about how Bernie Sanders is like a phony. And even though he is like, he does a great job of seeming authentic, to me, he just seems like a very authentic, real person. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren, too. And I think that's like a real key is to craft that authentic persona. But I don't think it's necessarily real. And I think what Trump has done is made it, I mean, maybe that I hope that's Trump's authentic persona, because if it's not, it's like crazy that he would fabricate that. But like, that's something that, you know, that's something that in today's political world, like he is, I mean, you have to think that's why he's so popular, is that he seems like he just doesn't, can I curse?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just seems like he just doesn't give a fuck, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can say a lot of things on this show.
So about 2 years ago,
yes.
I secretly predicted the return of rom-coms. Mm-hmm. I did this in like a bunch of meetings, so I don't really have any proof that I predicted this, but I did.
Oprah has the proof.
But so how do you feel about being sort of on this wave of like the rom-com sort of coming back and in more of a, I mean, you know, I look back at movies I love, like something like The Wedding Planner, which is very different from something like Long Shot or like Someone Great, which we just had Jen Robinson on the podcast. And like, how do you sort of see this movie in that kind of resurgence?
Well, I mean, I think that for Seth and I, this was always something we really loved was the genre of romantic comedy. And it was, you know, I think a lot of times now people talk about romantic comedy in kind of an ironic way. Like they're kind of, well, they're kind of, it's like you accept that they kind of are not good and you like them because they're not good. But I think for us, we wanted to make one that was genuinely good and had a quality level and performances that were great and was genuinely funny and genuinely romantic. And I think that is something that kind of went away for a while, that I think it maybe just the degree of difficulty was too high. And Hollywood was like, well, they'll take the shitty version of this, so we'll give them the shitty version of it. Right. And then they died. But I think, you know, Hollywood has been making rom-coms since the 30s and 40s. Those are like...
I mean, the best movies, like, that I've ever seen are, you know, like these, like, Bringing Up Baby.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, right. The Katharine Hepburn movies, you know, like...
Right. Moonstruck.
Yeah, you know, they made really smart, intelligent rom-coms, like, quote-unquote, women's pictures, you know, before, like, the 60s and 70s happened. And they were like, we need to be gritty and have Steve McQueen stealing cars.
But, yeah, I mean, it's something that used to be associated with quality and now sort of seems to be associated with less quality. But I think that, you know, we tried to do something that was of a certain quality level. I think there's, you know, some of the ones on Netflix I think are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, you know, because for me it's like... It's kind of why I wanted to start making movies in the first place. It's like, I loved When Harry Met Sally. That was like, you know, I loved Annie Hall. I guess it's not. I shouldn't talk about Annie Hall.
You know what? You can like the movie.
I don't think I could watch it now.
Yeah, I've had that with, I really liked Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
And I was flying to Paris and it was on the movie option. Yeah. And I was like, this would be a perfect movie to watch on my way to Paris. And you're like... Can't really do it, but I still love the movie.
I watched Vicky Cristina Barcelona this morning.
You did? Crazy. That is just a weird thing to do. You just woke up and threw on Vicky Cristina Barcelona?
The important thing is we have a movie where Kathy Bates played Gertrude Stein. That's very exciting. I was going to say, I am very much actress-oriented.
Okay.
So, like, whatever. You see a movie with, like, 100 men in it. Like, I consider The Ides of March a Marissa Tomei movie. You know what I mean? Like, you go down the list and find it. So Charlize, to me, is one of the most dependable... Just amazing actors, the amount of amazing performances she's given us. And I'm talking about North Country, Monster, like it goes back and back. I feel like she's somebody who almost probably can't be pushed anymore because she's such a masterful screen presence. And I'm wondering, what is it like to work with somebody at that caliber who's giving, you know, a rom-com performance?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we talked about how she would approach it from a genre, like reverse engineering it to the genre. I mean, I think what's so amazing about her is she really just is a storyteller and really wants to embody the character and she's also so funny. So it's like, there's a lot of like, holy shit, I'm just sitting here, I get to talk to you, which is kind of cool because I'm a huge fan of hers. And then you just see in her approach, like why she's great. She's just relentlessly trying to make everything better all the time. And she has such amazing taste too. And that's something that I think that's really important for working with actors is like, Seth and Charlize, they weren't just actors on the movie, they're producers, but it's like a taste level. It's like they just have good taste and it's not, you know, they could give you any type of performance, but they are crafting a performance that matches like their taste for rom-coms or their taste for, you know, character-driven comedy. And so that's a really key thing is that you all have the same kind of taste and we do. And I think that's another reason why she's so great is because her instincts are just fantastic.
It's rare that they are in awful movies, you know, like they're always in movies that are like giving you something really good. And even the ones that, you know, people might talk about like The Green Hornet or something, I really love,
I like
you know, and it's sort of like, that's actually my favorite Seth Rogen.
Were we just Is talking it? About our favorite Seth
yes,
Rogen movies?
We were.
What else? Yeah.
Mine was Pineapple Express.
Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of Seth Rogen,
you know,
Rogen
I directed
movies.
50-50 and The Night Before, if anyone wants to just talk about those.
50-50 was my, it was tied
it was
with Pineapple Express.
Final
yes, yeah.
Speaking of Seth movies, though,
yes.
I had a question about his character in this, you know, because a lot of it is, you know, the idea that like Fred Flarsky is unattractive compared to Charlize Theron, which did you feel that was some sort of like really trying to course correct, you know, like maybe a lot of the conversation around Seth with maybe Katherine Heigl in Knocked Up when that happened? Because weirdly, Seth looks super hot in this movie now.
Yeah,
a lot of those jokes maybe didn't fly the way they would have 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I think maybe in the marketing, it seems like that's sort of the concept. I think in the movie, we tried to make the concept more, not that he's unattractive and she's really hot. It was more like he's an idealist who can't get out of his own way and also makes some really bad decisions.
You did compare him to Guy Fieri.
Yeah, but I think that that was like, in that one particular scene, I think that's more about the public's perception of this versus, you know, versus what is real in the movie. And for me, like, I understand the value of the concept of this sort of mismatched romance. But to me, the more interesting thing is like people who challenge each other's ideals, people who have these different kind of idealistic like perspectives, and people who, you know, I think I want the audience to kind of quickly forget about that mismatch and be like, oh, these are, this is just a guy and a girl, and it could be any guy and a girl, and they're really, they fit each other really well, and they challenge each other and they make each other laugh. And like, so yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like we didn't really talk about Knocked Up, but I think we did know that like that part of it was not the most interesting part to us, you know? And you know, for me, it was like the reason I wanted to make a romantic comedy was not to make something like, you know, She's Out of My League or something like that. It was more to make something like a Cameron Crowe movie or you know, where it's like John Cusack and Ione Skye, not, you know, I don't know.
Well, all women are out of men's league, so
there
it's
we
hard
are.
To overcome that one.
Thank you so much for bringing up Ione Skye. Yes.
Yeah.
Daughter of Donovan.
Really?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
What?
Yeah, isn't that bizarre?
Cool.
And sister of Vanilla.
Sister of Vanilla Skye.
That's right. Movies have sisters. Yeah. I was going to say, you brought up how John Kerry's chief of staff was a consultant.
Yeah.
Was there anything he suggested that actually was too wild to put in the movie? I would think working with somebody like that, you would find out the reality is very strange and actually audiences probably wouldn't accept it.
Well, like there was something, we kind of shot it, but it was in a part where we just needed to move through faster, where like they're on these planes so much that everyone, like there's kind of a doctor that walks down the aisle of Air Force Two. I'm not sure I'm even supposed to tell this story, but who like gives you like either amphetamines if you need to stay up or like something to sleep. It's like basically just like a pill doctor.
Propofol? Yeah.
Dr. Conrad Black?
Yes. Propofol is fucking good, man. Have you ever had propofol? Not recreationally.
Yeah, I love a propofol.
It's so great.
Yeah. You know, I want to end up like Michael Jackson.
It was not, I got it for a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
Oh, that scans. Yeah, it has to exist for some reason.
But when I woke up out of it, I felt really euphoric. Mm-hmm. So anyway, a good reason to get colonoscopies, guys. We're talking about screening for colon cancer. Is that what we're talking about?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. You're Katie Couric, right?
I am Katie Couric.
You've done 50-50, you know, Night Before and now this. Like, what's next for you? Like, what is exciting you about where you want to go in your career?
I would like to write some stuff. I would like to, I'm gonna kind of probably do like a Warm Bodies TV show.
That was a great movie.
Thank you very much. And I am going to probably, just go, I think, do some streaming stuff because you don't have to deal with like it coming out. Which is really stressful. And it just seems really fun to do that for a second, and then I'll hopefully write something or I don't know. I'm just really proud of this movie, and I've done, I think since The Night Before, I've done like three movies in a row really quickly, and it's a lot. I think I just want to like relax and breathe and like really think about what I want to do next.
So Longshot is in theaters now. People should go see it.
You should.
And, you know, I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I don't want to thank you for talking about Jon Favreau on this show.
I'm sorry, guys. I thought it was like a family affair.
It's
touching.
Tommy's our dad.
Yeah.
Jon Lovett is the cousin we sometimes invite to Christmas. And
His cousin Oliver.
Who's Favreau?
You know.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not really on this joke. This is Irish joke. I like John.
He's a lovely
person.
You
know, yeah.
He's the neighbor from Bewitched.
By the way, I want to give extra props to June Diane Raphael in this movie, who is
amazing.
Just fabulous on Grace and Frankie, but wonderful in this movie, too.
You guys should have her in here. She's pretty cool.
She's also, like, good at podcasts, which I also love.
She's a good podcaster.
Yeah.
She's a pro.
We'll have her in to talk about Bravo, and Lewis will
disappear.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yeah, you disappear. You know, we'll give you what you want, but it'll be a curse.
Okay. Okay.
When we're back, we're going to talk about Louis C.K. Louis Calvin Klein, who is still trucking along on his comedy comeback tour.
That was clever.
That's from my comeback tour.
You're type five. Yeah.
Yeah. He is taking new precautions to avoid audience members from filming his set. It was first reported by writers James Shotwell that the Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis sent out a notice informing ticket holders that not only will their phones be put into yonder pouches, but due to copyright laws, they would be unable to record, redistribute, or reproduce any of Louis' material. The copyright notice had one glaring, ironic sentence that caught people's attention. It read, "Any use of materials without the express prior written consent of Louis C.K. is strictly prohibited."
What is this, an O. Henry story?
I know.
You love a silly twist.
First of all, these yonder pouches are very annoying.
I mean, there's not a comedy show on earth that's worth that trouble.
Right.
Right. Oh, my God. Imagine throwing your phone away during a comedy show. What a shocking idea.
I mean, what are you going to look at when it gets boring?
Right. Or horribly awkward or whatever. There's always a moment in stand-up where you're like, how am I in this room still?
I know. A point where they fixate on someone in the front of the audience and they're like, hey, what you doing over there, sis? And it's like, please leave her alone.
I'm sympathetic to stand-up comics, but God, does it get awkward. Jesus.
So, I don't know. Louis C.K., now it's obvious that he's working on probably a special or something, trying to do something that he's testing material for. Mm-hmm. That's why he doesn't want this recorded. Aziz Ansari did that recently at a show. And apparently one of Dave Chappelle's shows before he did his Netflix special had this thing too. Is this weird?
That is interesting. I mean, like, look, if I am performing on stage, which occurs very infrequently, as you know, I stick to cabaret mostly. Mm-hmm. But if I were to see, like, a cell phone open in the audience, I mean, it would distract me in a particular way because you're trying to keep one train of thought going. You know what I mean? I mean, like, because it's not the same thing as singing. Not that that doesn't fucking bother me when I'm surrounded by a sea of people filming somebody on stage. I just want to say that I saw pictures recently of a James Taylor concert who, you know, is in his 70s. Nobody had their cell phones out. Let's give it up for people in their 70s, because that's like the last experience we're going to get like that.
But the thing here, it's not about the distraction, right? It's like he doesn't want, because he's already had his shitty jokes leaked. Mm-hmm. Like when he made fun of a bunch of teenagers who were in a mass shooting, and when he made fun of people who have different gender identities, and it didn't go over well. And so he's just protecting himself. He doesn't want people getting mad at him anymore. Yeah. And the thing that, like, listen, I am not like a huge stand-up comedy fan, and I know that part of it is, like, in order to practice, you need an audience and you do have to go to clubs. That sort of feels like an occupational hazard of, like, the way that you know your material is good is you have to go test it out on people. And sometimes now people might leak it. Like, it's weird to me that you just are, you can now decide that you're just going to change the way everyone, like, operates and goes out at night because you don't like the way that, you know, this is going. But I guess my other question is, and I don't know, because again, not a stand-up comedian, but like maybe just don't test it that way. Mm-hmm. Like maybe invite a bunch of comedians over and run your jokes by them. Like the idea that this is the only possible way for him to like test his material to me doesn't make a lot of sense.
In the theater, you know, when we've got a new piece, you know, we just round up the rest of the artists, you know, like have a little hurly-burly moment, you know, read some stuff, swap some whiskey, you know, like we're just vibing here. And then when we get to rehearsals, you know, we're on the road, we're in Kansas, you know, like you're doing some runs before you get to Broadway.
No guess as to what the accent is or who the playwright is you're imitating, but very good.
Thank you.
Yes.
It was my Lanford Wilson.
Right. Oh, got it. No, I agree. I mean, yeah, he's pretending like it's some sacred space he needs to have in order to produce comedy. It's like, we have a Twitter right there.
Yeah, it's a comedy club. Yeah. Like, I mean, give me a break.
Which also, like, famously, you've desecrated sacred spaces with your semen.
Oh, God.
He did it!
Also, I wonder if it applies... Like, is he doing, like, open mics where there are other comedians also performing? Like, with Aziza's show, I understand a little bit more, because these are, like, big comedy shows that presumably he's filming. I mean, like, not really, but... if there are other people also performing, like, why then do you get to dictate the rules of the evening?
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're an asshole?
Yeah. It really puts me in the mood for comedy. All these rules, though, my God.
Well, it also feels a bit like last week, too. You know, like, not even just even the jokes coming out, just, like, no reviews of the show, no, like, any sort of, like, feedback on your performance.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, he's really into asking for permission.
Yes, as Padma... tweet it.
Oh, did she? Padma?
Yes. Padma tweeted, now Louis C.K. cares about consent.
Ooh.
Yes.
Pack your knives and go.
Those top chef burns in the kitchen.
What an amused douche. Yeah.
Yeah, he sucks. But you know, like, we're 100%, not we, someone will be getting a Louis C.K. special soon. And I will be interested to see who decides to put that shit out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's the one who funded Tig Notaro's thing on his own website. So it's possible he'll just release
himself. Yeah. That's the only good move for him.
Yeah. You know, comedy, step up to the streets. You know, he'll take it back where it started.
Oh, yeah. That's what I think of when I think of him. Streets, walking on them.
He loves a jot.
Also, by the way, this nonsense with him has been going on so long. I truly am sick of hearing people defending whatever was amazing about him. It's like, yeah, once upon a time, I did see a few episodes of Louis that were good. But just, it's so beyond the pale now, and I'm...
The camera work, that scene where they ate pizza in New York. I've eaten pizza at that place in New York before. Oh, my God. It was life-changing.
Right.
Yeah, he is one of those where, like, when you talk about someone like Woody Allen, or you talk about, even to some extent, not like Harvey Weinstein was creating things, but you're like, he had his hand in, like, some really excellent movies, and sort of what it, or like Michael Jackson's probably the best example of, like, what it means now to sort of give up that art. Louis C.K. is not in that category. Like, we don't need to have discussions about what to do with his stuff now. It's like, don't watch it.
Wasn't that damn good.
Yeah, like, you can just sweep that to the side.
There's always someone online who likes to be, Louis C.K. wrote Pootie Tang? I mean, it shows.
Like, we...
Just a white person wrote that for a studio.
We need to save these conversations for what we're going to do with Thriller. A real conundrum. Mm. Louis seasons 4 and whatever, they can go. Goodbye.
I am worried about Thriller now that you mentioned it. We haven't figured out what to do.
No.
Well, when Halloween rolls around, we'll figure it out.
Oh my God, we know it. It will just be surrounded by it again.
Yeah.
6 months from now, we don't remember shit.
Wow. Yeah. I don't remember my kids' birthdays.
And it shows.
I don't remember having kids. Do I have kids? Anyway, when we're back, keep it. And we're back for the best part of each episode is keeping it 100. I'm kidding. Keeping it 1600. What is it?
That was a throwback.
Yeah, it's keep it. It's keep it. That's what the segment is.
Keeping it 1600 is the Eden's Crush of podcasting. But later become a bigger phenomenon.
Pod Save America is the Pussycat Doll.
That's right. and we're all thinking that, right?
This is the Scherzinger solo career. Poo a kitty kitty. What is your keep it?
I'm sorry I'm not more informed about my own keep it, but my keep it is to that goddamn Starbucks cup on Game of Thrones. First of all, I saw the pictures on Twitter. And I naturally thought it was planted or fake, or, you know, like that that Jason Derulo falling at the Met Gala thing where it's like, oh, that was actually 5 years ago and everybody just keeps forgetting and reposting it 100,000 times. I don't know. I know that this show, from what I've seen, and I've now seen 3 episodes, so I'm
like
pretty much an expert.
Like the most recent ones?
Correct.
Okay.
Very smart of me.
Okay.
Yeah. my roommates watch it. I just watch it.
It's like jumping into Dynasty after Alexis has already taken the mansion.
You know, it's like jumping into Happy Days when, like, the only person left on the show is, like, Joni's friend. Like, there's just, like, nobody left.
It's still Fonzie, though.
Right. Oh, yeah. At age, like, 70 on the bike. I just know that this is, I think, almost... inarguably, the most impeccably produced TV show of all time. So when I see a gaffe like that, and I do believe this is the biggest gaffe in television history, it is so shocking. The image of that cup is burned in my mind. Truly, I can't figure out how that possibly happened or how they couldn't fix it or didn't see it or whatever. And I cannot let it go. It is on my mind constantly. I am sitting at work thinking, no one saw the cup. I'm sitting at work thinking, you're telling me that actress who looks like Tilda Swinton or the other one who looks like Christina Ricci didn't pick it up? Knock it down.
It is especially shocking, not just that it made it through edit. I mean, they were sitting there and were like, action. While right. this fucking Starbucks cup is sitting there.
And in a way, Amelia Clark, right?
Yeah.
Is just kind of looking over it.
I mean,
it's
also,
in her line of sight.
I think it's 20 million an episode.
Yeah.
That it caught, like, it, and it takes a long time for them to shoot these up. It's truly like a movie.
It took that 2 years to make this fucking season. 2 years.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Guys, maybe it was on purpose?
I don't know.
Let's give them something to talk about.
Yeah.
Now, HBO actually issued a statement, too, that was like, we noticed the coffee cup, and actually, Daenerys meant to order herbal tea, not coffee.
Oh, you know I love content.
It is weird that there, because it makes me feel like it was in the shot for all of the footage they had. Because, you know, you would think like, oh, we'll just use a different take.
They've edited it out now,
but it feels like it honestly feels like they looked back at all of their dailies and they saw that cup was in every single take and they were just like, fuck it. Who's going to notice? There's like 18 dragons. I don't know. Are there dragons in this?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's one now.
I feel like they were like, oh, no one's going to notice.
Which is, I mean, it feels like nobody notices anything except things on Game of Thrones. So I think maybe the extra step should have been taken.
Also, like, you know, this is going to lead to such an exhausting SNL sketch on Saturday.
Oh, sure.
So thanks for that, Game of Thrones.
Will her name be spelled wrong? Whatever. Yeah. Lots of options.
Thanks, HBO. Can't wait to see dragons in Insecure. Carol, what's your keep it?
My keep it's not like that, you know, groundbreaking, but it is to Donald Trump for giving Tiger Woods the fucking Presidential Medal of Honor or Freedom. I don't know. First of all, I don't know the difference between the medals that they give out. To me, it's like a president pinning a medal on you. What difference does it make which one it is? And you know what I will say? I wasn't like happy about Tiger Woods winning, but I was like, you know what? That was like a feat. Like, you know, congratulations, man, because I sure did not think you were ever going to win anything again. And now you're out here accepting this medal from Donald Trump. And by the way, the list, maybe it's a keep it to everyone he's given this medal to, which includes Elvis,
yeah, Babe Ruth,
and Anton Scalia. What the fuck? Like, half of them are dead, and then the rest are just people who have given him money.
They've all stolen things from black people.
Well, that's who he's giving the money.
Anton Scalia stole rights. Elvis stole music.
Pat Boone's next.
What did Babe Ruth steal?
Second base.
I'm sure he stole something from Jesse Robinson.
Jackie Robinson. Okay.
But Jesse Robinson was Jackie Robinson's brother.
Oh, okay.
And I think that he stole something from him and then framed it on Jackie.
Yes.
And then Jesse told a bunch of white people to come to the stadium and harass his brother, Jackie. And, well, the
rest is history.
Yeah, it seems so obvious now.
Yeah, I don't know. They're both assholes. And he looked stupid giving him the medal. He looked stupid wearing it. I don't know what to tell you.
It does feel like getting a Grammy from like Milli Vanilli. Like technically they're Grammy.
Yeah, wins. Like it also feels like in a best case scenario where we fast forward like 10 or 20 years, where we realize that Donald Trump was never a legitimate president and we have an asterisk next to everything he's done, that I hope all of those people, I hope the Secret Service shows up at Tiger Woods' door, he's like, give us that damn medal back.
Rob Elvis's casket.
Yeah, like, give us that shit back. This isn't real. You didn't earn this. He wasn't really the president. And that's what Tiger would deserve for even accepting it from him in the first place.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
sounds like a Sarah Rule play. 100 years in the future, the Trumps are like, actually, he was never president. What happens to them?
Thoughtful.
Anyway, my keep it this week is for this memoir Billy McFarlane is writing.
Wait. Firefest? Festival.
Yes. it's called like Prometheus, God of Fire.
That's actually
FYR.
I gotta say, that's actually a pretty good title.
But I don't want to read his cobbled together memoir from prison. I don't want him making money.
But wait, somebody with a God complex couldn't possibly have run this operation. It seems so shocking. Are we talking about the same guy?
It, you know, I, much like Elizabeth Holmes, I have said publicly, like, I would have watched a third Fyre Fest documentary. I would not read, shocker, a Fyre Fest book. That's not what I want from this. I want to see the influencers with the tears streaming down their faces. I want to see them taking the selfies and then the slow deterioration on their Instagram story to crying on an island somewhere in the middle of the night. I don't want to read about this. I want to see it.
Also, Prometheus is spelled P-R-O-M-Y-T-H-U-S.
Oh, never mind. I take it back. But it's, I take it back.
It's already a myth. Why do you need to put myth in his name?
Prometheus.
That makes no goddamn
Does
sense.
Does he have, like, is someone publishing this or he's just writing it?
He's just tentatively writing it. No publisher yet.
I don't need to read a book about somebody who made a bunch of, like, just a bunch of impulsive decisions.
He's going to self-publish it.
Okay. Yeah.
He made a bunch of impulsive decisions. He said epic 30,000 times to Ja Rule and everybody was stranded in the streets. That's the whole story.
How much longer do we think he has left in prison?
Did he just go? I mean, I'm sure he's got a few years left.
He was about to go in one of the documentaries. They were like, I'm about to go to prison. I don't know how long he has, but.
I think he's there with Michael Cohen in the same place and The Situation from Jersey Shore. So.
Oh, maybe The Situation can proofread it for you.
There you go. Maybe they can have a VH1 docuseries.
I would actually much rather read a memoir from The Situation than I would Billy McFarlane. I would read the shit out of a Situation memoir. Has seen some things.
Who's your favorite Jersey Shore cast member?
Oh, man. I mean, favorite, like.
Which STD bothers you least?
I think it's got to be Vinny.
I like Vinny too.
Yeah.
Vinny and JWoww are my favorites.
I like JWoww too. Yeah. Mm.
My favorite character is the letter that Snooki wrote.
About to Ronnie and what was her name? Sweetie, honey? What?
Sam.
But didn't she have Sammy. Like Sammy Sweetheart?
Yeah. Yeah. The sweetest bitch you'll ever meet. By the way, the New York Mag report on Billy's book is very beautiful. It says, there are claims that, like, Ryan Seacrest visited McFarland in prison to discuss plans to purchase the name and remount Fyre Festival himself. And Ryan Seacrest says it's not true. And also, they were saying that he had reached out to Walter Isaacson, the writer and journalist behind the Steve Jobs biography, about working on Prometheus. And he didn't understand why Isaacson wasn't returning his calls. And when reached for comment, Isaacson asked who Billy McFarland was.
That's how you do it. I do not recall. Goodbye.
Listen, this self-published messy book. Well, I read Omarosa's. I will not read this.
That's a low bar.
Billy McFarland is no Omarosa.
I mean, that I actually agree with. Sure.
Period.
Yeah. No, she's at least a self-owned stunt queen. He is just sort of a life-ruining stunt queen.
But he probably will be on season 9 of Celebrity Big Brother.
You think you're kidding. I'm not sure that will happen.
I'm not kidding. I'm very serious about that.
Right.
Yes, Julie will snap him up.
Right, and like Phaedra Parks will be in there with him, like stuck and trying to get out or whatever.
Well, that's our show. We'll see you next week.